Carrico, good morning to you. On May approach, we still have people coming in and out of the courtroom. That appears now to be taken care of, so you may proceed.
May it please the court, I am Warren Carrico, Lancaster County Deputy Public Defender, and I represent the appellant Donna H. in his appeal of the juvenile court's May 10, 2017 order placing him outside the family home at a home for boys. This order is appealable if the final and it affects substantial right to his parent-child relationship and is in a special proceeding. The May 10th, 2017 order is the first order that affects Donna's substantial right, and therefore we are obligated to appeal from this order. The court is establishing cases including in re-interest of Joshua M. and in re-interest of Sarah K. that appellants forfeit their right to appeal when they do not appeal from the initial order affecting the substantial right, but rather appeal only from the order that continues that first order. Donna has appropriately appealed from the first order affecting his constitutional and substantial right to the continuing parent-child relationship and did not waive his right to appeal by waiting to appeal from a subsequent order. The record in this case further reflects that the order placing Donna outside the family home was final, and that the juvenile court made findings applicable to the statutory framework from Section 43-251-01, subsection 7, in the May 10, 2017 order. And the only evidence presented related to the length of the placement was that the average placement at a home for boys was a minimum of 6 months to 12 to 14 months. There is no indication in the record that Donna's placement would be shorter than this average.
Is that long enough?
It's long enough for this court's precedent to be a final order based upon the appellate framework for a statutory or for a special proceeding. And also, a six-month order is the longest order that a juvenile court can have for an adequate placement without reviewing it. So for juvenile court purposes, this is the longest type of order that you can have for this adequate placement. So for our current purposes, this is about as final as it could be. The fact that the court placed or continued its order placing Donna outside the home at a subsequent hearing in June further demonstrates the finality of this May 10, 2017 order. The legislature anticipated that courts might place juveniles outside the family home while continuing final disposition when it specifically made 43-251-01 apply to both final and temporary dispositions. In other words, the legislature has established that juvenile courts don't get to avoid applying the criteria in subsection 7 before placing a juvenile outside the family home simply by labeling the order as temporary rather than final.
And what was your statutory authority for that, both types of orders?
In the statute 43-251-01, before the subsections, it says that this statute applies to both dispositions, temporary or final. So this shows an anticipation by the legislature that courts could place juveniles outside of the home and consider it to be a temporary disposition, but they can't avoid applying the statutory framework, which is finding that all available community-based resources have been exhausted and that maintaining the juvenile in the home presents a significant risk of harm.
So what you're saying is that even if it were a temporary order, the court must nevertheless consider 7A and B.
That's correct. Even if the court considers it to be a temporary order.
Even if it was just hypothetically.
Correct.
A day.
That's correct. And it logically would follow that if the court didn't apply any community resources at all, it would be necessary to be able to appeal this decision, even if it was on a temporary basis. An issue in this case is a question of first impression for this court, and that is the interpretation of the statute that I just mentioned, 43-251-01. And Donna is asking that this court vacate the juvenile court's order and remand the case with instructions to place him back in the family home. The statute was recently enacted in April 2015, and based upon the statements of intent of the bill's authors and the relevant Florida debate, the purpose of this subsection 7 was to limit the juveniles in out-of-home placements to those juveniles that, despite all resources being utilized, still remain a safety risk in the family home. This legislative statement...
Is that the right that to which the juvenile is associated?
us about that constitutional right. Is it a parent's right or is it a child's right?
In the case of the guardianship of DJ, they did establish that there was a reciprocal right for the child to have this right to the continuing parent-child relationship. But you are correct that the majority of cases that are before this court do deal with the context of parents appealing this right. In the present case, the record reflects that the evidence was insufficient to establish that Donna was afforded an opportunity to try all available community resources and was insufficient to establish that he posed a significant risk of harm if maintained in the home. At the time that the court placed him outside the family home, the evidence presented that it had been over 2.5 years since he had last had a law violation adjudication, and statements by the court and testifying probation officers stated that his only issue at that time was truancy. He was not running from the home, he didn't have any law violations recently, that he had not threatened to assault him, he wasn't misbehaving in the home, and he was in fact in the school building every day at the time that he was placed outside the home despite not attending class while being there. This fact that he was actually in the school building at the time when he was placed outside the family home shows that he was actually improving in these community resources should have been given a chance to work.
He was in the building, but he wasn't going to class.
That's correct. And I think that this demonstrates that the family environment was not related to his inability to go to school and that he should have had further opportunity to try further resources or at least let the resources that were in place take over.
What were those resources?
He had tracker services, which is someone who checks in on him. The record reflected that when his probation officer did make face-to-face contact with him, he was more likely to attend school that day. He did have intensive family preservation. However, there was concerns that there was not a Kurdish interpreter at times for this intensive family preservation. He did not get the opportunity to use multi-systemic therapy, and he did not get the opportunity to have outpatient counseling. It's our position that the statutory framework has not been met.
So those are the two things that are missing?
Those are the two things that we raised in court. There may be other resources that have not been tried as well.
How is the court to know if everything has been exhausted?
At the point where he was making improvements at the time when he was placed outside the home, when he was actually in the school building, that demonstrates that there was hope for him to fix the issue of truancy. And truancy alone has not been a basis for finding that maintaining the juvenile in the family home presents a significant risk of harm. Legislative intent of subsection 7 focused on maintaining juveniles in the home absent finding that they pose a public safety threat.
What about harm to himself?
We do acknowledge that going to school is something that's very necessary to the well-being of a child. However, the legislative body had indicated that there was a harm in taking a juvenile outside of the family home. That was a harm in and of itself. And this court has now found that truancy alone has been a basis for removing a child from the family. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. Is it Ms. Lampsey? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Chester. May it please the court, my name is Maureen Lampsey, and I am representing the state, also the appellee in this matter. It's the state's position that this was a temporary...
Are you from the county attorney's office? Thank you.
This is a temporary order. It was an interim order. The judge continued to enter interim orders throughout this case, waiting to see if there was any services or any combination that Donna would actually follow through with.
By simply labeling this as a temporary order, is it in fact a temporary order?
Yes. In this case, Donna actually had not been placed out of home yet. There was an order, there was another hearing set on August 27th or 8th. This was the actual second hearing on the matter. So there were two rulings that were being appealed. He still wasn't placed out of home after the first one. There were other interim orders that were also entered. He still had an opportunity to comply with those and work with probation during those times. Conceivably, if he would have followed through and actually started attending school after the April order, those interim orders could have changed again. June because those services were still in place. Probation was still trying to work with him to attend school in the family home. The services that Mr. Carver refers to that were not tried, the therapy, the individual therapy and the MST, because IFP had already been tried, that therapy in the home, even though there wasn't an interpreter at times, the interpreter was for his mother, not for Donna. Donna only minimally complied with that. So if you're only minimally complying with therapy when the therapist actually comes to your home, it's logical to think that you're not going to comply with therapy if it actually requires you to go to that therapist.
Help us with those initials a little bit. What does one stand for? What does the other stand for?
IFP is intensive family preservation, and MST is multi-systemic therapy. Both of those therapies are therapies that go into the home and work with the family on changing behavior.
So are you telling us that in-home therapy had already been tried?
Yes. And additionally, there was the plan of changing his placement to a relative placement, but as the record shows, he was going to the school building, but he just still wasn't going into class. I think it's also important to know, moving on to the additional merits, that this is not just a status offense. This is a law violation. The law violation was bringing a switchblade to school. And it's unfortunate that basically, after that time, his attendance continued to get worse and worse. Essentially, instead of going back to school and remedying the issue of bringing a weapon to school, he just chose to avoid school and classes. If there's not a way for the court to impose and follow through with having a juvenile change, then all of this really hasn't been for anything. He's worse off when he started, because if there's no way for the court to order him out of home, for not going to school and for not following through with order after order after order, the juvenile court system loses a lot of its effectiveness. And I think it's important that for somebody who brought a weapon to school and then consistently hasn't gone to school, I think there is a harm.
How does one wander around a school building and not go to class?
I have no idea.
Does the school have some responsibility or role in this? Is that an alternative?
It could be. I would note that he did have an individual educational plan. I don't know that the probation officer gave any testimony about what the school was saying. I think the fact that he was going to school was based on his own report to the probation officer, maybe. That I don't know as far as that. But I mean, a school can't use physical means to force him into that classroom. I think that's why the judge was hopeful that placement at Omaha Home for Boys would change that they might be more effective. You know, when you're in a group home, maybe there's no other alternative but to actually sit in a classroom, try and learn, to try and become a productive member of society. Because right now, I mean, unfortunately, Donna has not made any changes. I don't think he has any, the records show that he doesn't have any credits towards graduation. This was the court's last-ditch effort to overcome that harm of not having an education and having it said that he just doesn't have to follow through with any court orders. That's harmful for you. The court found that that was harmful. And I would ask.
To whom was the harm directed?
Well, the harm for not going to school is primarily directed at him. As I cited in my brief, there was a harm, a risk of harm, when you bring a weapon to school. And because he hasn't successfully done probation orders, I think that harm, potential for harm, is still there, too. If he hasn't been rehabilitated,
so there are two arms.
Yes. And for those reasons, I first ask that the court find that there is no jurisdiction, but even if there is, I think the court's order should be sustained. insurance case, virtual insurance. My recollection, because that one was on him too, was that he was maybe in trouble for not showing up for school, and he was in the office, and that's when the switchblade.
So the appeal of the switchblade incident was pending, and thereafter he was charged with truancy.
I think he was charged with truancy before the switchblade, and then also
again,
because it was, the switchblade incident, I think partially the reason it was found was because he was having trouble in school, was trying to get him to focus on his schoolwork in an administrator's office, and that's how she found it. If there are no questions, I would again ask that the appeal be dismissed or the alternative that the judge's orders be affirmed.
Thank you very much. We have time for rebuttal. 1 minute and 32 seconds, Mr. Carroll.
Thank you, Your Honor. As far as I'd first like to address the temporary order and the fact that the court was labeling as a temporary order, if the court is allowed to simply label an order temporary and avoid appeal, you can see in this case the court had continued this position 11 times. There would be a way to avoid appeal altogether, and so it is imperative that this court follow its prior precedent from Joshua M. Sarah Kane and allow this appeal to go forward, given that it is the first order that affects this substantial right. I'd also like to address the law violations switchblade. I think it's important to note that Donna did not take the switchblade out in that incident. It was just found in his backpack during the search.
So it's okay if it's just found in the backpack?
What was that?
So it's okay if you just
take
the switchblade?
It is not okay, but I think that goes to whether there was a significant risk of harm, and especially given that it was 2.5 years ago and he hadn't exhibited any behavior related to that law violation since then. I would also point out that MST and I and Multidisciplinary Adjustment Therapy and Intensive Family Preservation, there was testimony that these were distinct versions of in-home therapy with different methods that may have different effects. And I think Donna should be afforded that opportunity. And seeing as I am ending my time, I would ask the court to overturn or vacate the order below and directions to place it back in the home.
Thank you very much. Our next case of the day is State X Rail.